Yesterday was round one, and we're headed into round two in the battle for your mind. Today's topic, creation versus evolution. Which one requires more faith to believe in? The surprising answer is coming up. Stay with us.
Welcome to today's edition of Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram. I'm Dave Drewy, and today Chip continues in our groundbreaking series, Why I Believe. Now, if you missed any of the programs in this series, you can hear them whenever you want by going to lote.org. That's lote.org, and clicking on the Listen Online button. Now, right after Chip's message, I'll let you know how you can get a copy of this audio series for your own library or for a friend. Now let's join Chip for part two of the message, Why I Believe in Creation.
Genesis chapter 1, verses 27 and 28, the intelligent designer, it says, God created man in his own image to share relationship with him, glorify him, and be a steward of the earth. In Genesis chapter 1, follow along as I read, it says, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth and subdue it. Look at those verbs. Subdue, rule, be fruitful. Rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living creature that moves on the ground. Ecclesiastes 3:11 says, he has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the hearts of men. Yet they cannot fathom what God has done from the beginning to the end. Ask yourself when you say, why are you here? Why did life begin? Does it make more sense to see the desires in your heart? Does it make more sense to pick up one of your kids and look in his eyes and say, you know, I have these strong feelings of love and passion and concern. That's all just a chemical reaction over billions of years of time plus chance? Or could it be you're made in the image of God? Could it be that every culture on the face of the earth worships a God and has a concept of an afterlife because eternity is in their hearts? Could it be that just getting enough stuff makes you feel empty and that relationships and meaning and purpose are important because you're made in the image of God? And made in the image of God, then you're not an animal. You have the ability to think and to feel and to choose. And why is it that deep in everyone's soul, this is C.S. Lewis's argument in his book Mere Christianity, why is it in your soul and in your intellect that you have this sense of justice? There are certain things that are right and certain things that are wrong. Why is it when people are killed indiscriminately? Why is it that when people who are innocent and taken advantage of, something rises up in you and says, that's wrong, that's bad? Animals don't have that. Obviously, the answer is that has evolved. And that has evolved to help preserve us as the top of the species. But ask yourself, which evidence makes the best argument for what you honestly experience? Question number three. How did various plants and animals develop? The evolution's answer is a simple cell evolved to more complex plants and animals through the process of time, chance, natural selection, mutations, and the survival of the fittest over a period of billions of years. Now, what you need to understand, too, is that, you know, Darwin, although he may have gotten a little bit off track, maybe way off track, was a searching young mind looking for answers. And most of Darwin's ideas were not original. In a very interesting book called The Five Lies of the Century, David Moore quotes and gives the background behind Darwin's thinking. Evolution wasn't Darwin's idea, he writes. Australian author and scientist Michael Denton wrote, there was nothing fundamentally novel about the concept of Darwinian theory. The core idea of the origin, that living things have originated gradually as a result of the interplay of chance and selection, has long been pedigree. As far back as 550 BC, Anaximander of Miletus taught that life was generated from sea slime. It seems that one day that while he was walking to a nearby city, he saw a number of puddles. Several days later, when he returned home, he noticed the same puddles had little wiggly creatures in them. Based on his observation, he theorized that they emerged and life emerged from puddles of water. Just 100 years later, in 450 BC, Empedocles taught his students that natural selection determined which animals would survive and which ones would not. By the 5th century BC, automatists had already declared that life forms were related to a primordial progenitor and that selection was responsible for the ever-changing spectrum of life. Neither evolution nor natural selection were original with Darwin. However, they finally took hold in his writings. Now, people have always been asking the questions, where do we come from and why are we here? And Darwin, it wasn't until 1860 that Louis Pasteur, through his experiments, proved that spontaneous regeneration was impossible. And what all scientists believe today is that life always comes from life. Life cannot come from non-life. That wasn't true in Darwin's day. He was going based on, in fact, I remember this happening as a kid. And without scientific evidence and more intellect, the same problem could happen. I remember as a little kid, there was a creek behind my house. And, you know, you catch frogs and tadpoles and you do all that stuff. And every so often we'd get a big rain, and so the water would come up on the banks. And then it would recede and you'd have these puddles. And, you know, I mean, every day we'd get our boots and we'd be down in there and catching crawdads. And I remember one day seeing this little puddle, and there was nothing in it. And it was, oh, that's really cool, and I didn't think anything about it. I went back about 2 days later, and there were all these little tadpoles swimming around in it. And I remember, literally remembering this and thinking as a kid, wow, this puddle's over here, the creek's over there, tadpoles must come from puddles. Now, I was only about 5. I didn't know anything about frog eggs. I didn't know you couldn't see frog eggs. In fact, at that point, I didn't know that tadpoles would eventually become frogs. But I remember thinking, whoa, that's really amazing. Well, you know, we look at that and you kind of laugh and say, well, you know, that's how 5-year-olds think. But you need to understand, people with inquisitive scientific minds, they didn't know where life came from. They've never looked into an electron-powered microscope. They had no idea that, in fact, one of Darwin's key theories we're going to see, he was convinced that the single cell, what he could see was just fluid. The nucleus of just a single cell, he thought was just fluid, was empty. He thought it was one of the most simple, simplistic. It was the base unit of life, and from it, everything grew. And the reason this revolution is occurring is because now we can see inside that cell. And we can see a DNA pattern that I'm going to talk about next week that, I mean, it will blow your mind. We will talk about protein engines and motors that are inside every single cell. In fact, we're going to learn next week that if you took just the DNA, I mean, it's very small, it's all encoded with information. If you took the DNA, the equivalent that you could put in a teaspoon, there's more information in the DNA in that one teaspoon than all the books, all the information, anything that has ever been written, ever, in all the computers, in all the stored, in all the microchips, anywhere on the earth, in one teaspoon of DNA. That's how complex it is. At just the right time, your DNA, and that's found in every single cell. Every one of your cells has that pattern that tells it, at this age, start this, stop this, start this, start this, start. It is unbelievably complex. And it can only work when they're synchronized together and when all the parts are there. In fact, Darwin's own theory, and I'm jumping ahead, which I normally do, but Darwin's one great theory was, what he couldn't figure out was how the human eye worked. Because it said the human eye, he had no idea of the 1,000,000,000 electrical impulses that the human brain has. He had no idea about the optic nerve, but here's what he saw. He saw as they did research, and now we know that like a housefly has 7,000 separate lenses in its eye. A beetle, there's one species of beetle, has 30,000 separate micro lenses in its eye. The problem with the eye is, it has to have an optic nerve connected to a brain. All those things have to work at one time. Now, if it's evolving, and if survival of the fittest and natural selection is really true, if an eye starts to evolve, but it can't work until all the pieces of the puzzle are there, there is nothing that ever promotes it to be a part of the species. Because seeing is something that either you have all the components of the eye and all the nerves and all the cells, and it works or it doesn't work. It's like a flashlight. You either have batteries in it or not. And Darwin looked at the eye and he said, I don't understand that. But he thought some way, someday, he could figure out how it works. That's what we're seeing in terms of the complexity. So how did various plants and animals develop? Did it happen out of this simple single cell? And then did that work to variations in plants? And then a little animal of some kind? And then over billions and billions of years, we finally got a fish. And then a fish turned to amphibians, and amphibians to reptiles, reptiles to birds, and you know the story. Or Could it be that God, the intelligent designer, created? That God created various plants, animals, kinds, and species in a harmonic balance to reflect His attributes and His character. There are 600 million different species of life on this planet. That's a lot of chance and a lot of time. Listen to what Romans chapter 1, verse 20 says about the creation and what God says it says about Him. It says, "For since the creation of the world," notice God's invisible qualities, His character, His eternal power, and His divine nature, what God is like, "have been clearly seen, being understood how, from what has been made, so that men are without excuse." It reveals intelligence, design, wisdom, beauty, power, intricacy. And then have you ever just stopped and, you know, by chance, have you ever just sat back and thought, you know, before we messed up a lot of the earth, okay? Before we messed it up, have you ever just sat back and said, wait a second, there's all these little kind of, little tiny protozoans you can't see, and there's one kind of fish and they eat them. Then there's these bigger fish and they eat them. And then you got these little insects that bug some people, but these little birds or bats, they come and eat them. And then there's snakes like those. And does it blow your mind? There is a harmonic balance in nature. And that not only does the world spin at an angle, but a balance of life, plants. I mean, here's the only point. Did that come by random chance? Or is it by intelligent design? One book I was reading was trying to make this point, and they used a picture. Remember that when the movie The 2001 Space Odyssey came out? Boom! Well, I can't do the music, but you get the idea. And one of the big moments, you know, they're going to go, and they go, and they come, I don't know, it's to a planet or a moon or something. I can't remember much of the film. And then when they get there, there's this monument on it. And they look at each other. Conclusion. Someone's been here before us. Why? Because as we're going to talk about later, wherever there's cause, wherever there's effect, there's cause. Wherever there's design, there's a designer. Wherever there's intelligence, there's an intelligent being. Whenever there's something that has happened, there's something that has created what has happened. You examine the evidence. Does the world that you live in and observe reflect a designer? Or random chance over billions of years? Final point I want to make, and then we're going to develop the next for next time, is which theory or claim, creative design or evolution, best explains the fossil record? Darwin made a very, very interesting admission. I'd like to read it to you. It's out of The Origin of the Species. Darwin wrote in a defense, because what happened is at that point in time in the middle of the 1800s, all the geological research they could find, they couldn't find any transitional forms. I mean, you know, do the math on this thing. If birds are becoming mammals, and if amphibians are becoming reptiles, and if fish are becoming amphibians, and this is happening, and it's happened over hundreds of millions or billions of years, and then if we can go into the geological structure and, you know, do all the testing and whatever and say this came from this time frame, this time frame, this time frame. Well, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out we ought to find these transitional forms. I mean, we ought to find some amphibious-type things, or we ought to find some birds that, you know, might have a couple arms, or some reptiles. And Darwin looked at the geological record and he said, it doesn't prove my theory. But he had a very confident future. Let me read the quote. Let him speak for himself. "Why then is not every geological formation and every stratum full of such intermediate links?" See, that was the breakdown. "Geology assuredly does not reveal any such finely graduated organic chain. And perhaps this is the most obvious and serious objection which can be argued against the theory." But here's his explanation. The explanation lies, as I believe, in the extreme imperfection of the geological record. Now, translation. Now, you think of his day. Basically, what he said was, it all fits together. This is a big missing link. Give those geologists another 50 years, and they'll see. Quote, David Romp, "The fossil record today, we are now 120 years after Darwin, and the knowledge of the fossil record has been greatly expanded. We now have 250,000 fossil species. But the situation hasn't changed much. We have even fewer examples of evolutionary transition than we had in Darwin's time. You see, the reason that Colin Patterson, although an avowed evolutionist, in 1980 began to ask, is this science or a faith system, is some of the most basic things, and the fossil record is maybe chief among them. And all those, there's been two or three things where evolutionists have said, hey, this is you know, one. Careful research finds that they're not there. What you find is that when we went through biology class, a lot of those transitional forms, they're sketched out. They're what could be. And I remember reading through thinking, if it's in your textbook and it's a little picture, it must be real. That's not real. That's an artist's rendering of what these transitional forms will look like. The problem is no one's ever found any. And the ones that they thought were, there was a very extreme extinct fish that seemed to have fins and wing-likes. And I can't remember exactly the name, a Solarium, or very unusual. And so they thought, this is at least one transitional form we can cling to. Except for back in about the middle of this century in the Indian Ocean, some fishermen caught one. No joke. And so they thought, well, great, maybe it's a transitional form. And so they did it, and the scientists ran all the tests on all the tissue and all the things and said, could this be? And what they found is, it's a very unusual-looking fish. Let's go back to our question. Is it intellectually feasible to believe that there is a divine designer, God? In fact, Colossians 1 tells us it's Christ, who has created the world, the universe, and all living things. Or is evolution, according to the scientific research by top-notch zoologists, paleontologists, embryologists, biologists, who are non-Christians, who do not believe the Bible or creation, when you take the data and weigh it in a balance, question, can you keep your brains in your head and be a follower of God? Absolutely. I want to end with a final thought. It is interesting to me that as science examines the data and is now abandoning Darwinism, they are not turning to God, they are not turning to creationism. The two major themes of explanation is a revised evolution that says, you know what, it wasn't gradual change. We don't know how it happened, and we have no idea how it works, but what happened was it was birds, mammal. Seriously. And they are now proposing Hoyle, the guy who made the comment about the 747 going through the junkyard. His new thesis, and they've got a new fancy scientific name for it, is that the life on this planet had to have come from another planet. Now, here's what you need to hear. We've done a lot of science, a lot of data, read a few verses. The fact of the matter is, you know what? These scientists are really bright people. And many of them, if not most of them, are really good people. But they have the same problem I have. And I'm going to just get right out there and say that you have. Down deep in my heart, I want to be king. I want to be master. I want to be boss. And I don't want anyone saying that they created me, because if they created me, I'm smart enough and you're smart enough to know I'm accountable to who created me. In fact, it was Huxley, the great atheist at the turn of the century, who said, what Darwin gave us was an intellectual, feasible excuse to be free of the bondage of morality, sex, and politics, and be intellectually acceptable and do our own thing apart from God. And the real issue with evolution and creationism is not how we're going to look at each cell, and it's not about arguments, and it's not about the age of the earth. The real issue behind it fundamentally is there is a God who created you. And we have promoted, developed, and we want to believe evolution, not because it weighs in scientifically strong, but because in your heart and my heart, you want to be the king of your life. And you and I are sinners who have strayed from God, and we want to do our own thing. And the God of the universe sent his Son, the Lord Jesus, to die for you and pay the price and by grace forgive you. But once we get rid of the Creator, we don't need to mess with him. And then we don't need to mess with his Son. And God this morning is reaching out to some of you and saying, that intellectual smokescreen you've been hiding behind, it ain't there. You don't have to throw your brains in the basket to be a Christian. I love you. I want to have a relationship with you. come to me.
That is the central theme of the Bible, Christ's love for you. Understanding and defending that truth is sometimes hard to do, and that's why Chip has created this series called Why I Believe. Now, this message, along with five others from Chip Ingram, will help you answer the most pivotal claims of the Christian faith and give you solid answers to some of life's toughest questions. You'll learn about the historical evidence supporting the resurrection of Christ, the reliability of the Bible, and the afterlife. In the process, you'll discover that you don't have to throw your brains in the trash can to become a Christian. The series is called Why I Believe, and it's available now for a special on-air discount price. Now, to order, please call toll-free 1-888-333-6003. This six-part CD series is perfect for personal study or as a small group curriculum for you or your church. Again, the CD series Why I Believe is available for a limited time at a special on-air discount price. Call today, 1-888-333-6003. 1-888-333-6003. Well, now here's Chip with an important update for Living on the Edge listeners.
Hi, this is Chip. I'll be back in just a second because I want to talk about this issue of evolution and creation and think with you out loud on that. But I want you to know there's lots of other controversial issues that we need to have good, solid, biblical, theological, and philosophical answers for. I'm not going to throw my brains in the trash to be a Christian. And so it raises issues about things like abortion, homosexuality, and does truth even exist? All this month, as we hear this series on Why I Believe, here's what I want you to know. We want to put those three booklets in your hands for free. Because of the gracious giving of those who stand behind Living on the Edge, you can log on, join the online community, and say, I would like those three booklets, and we'll send them to you. We want to minister to you. Our dream, our hope, our vision is to help Christians live like Christians and then help you help the lives of others. So I hope you'll log on to the online community. If you're already a member of that online community, just log back in and let us know you would like these three booklets and we'll send them right out.
Well, thanks, Chip. We are excited to offer these timely resources to you this month as our way of encouraging you in your spiritual journey. Right now, when you sign up for the new Living on the Edge online community, we'll send you this set of three booklets by Chip Ingram at no charge. The special booklet pack includes What to Say to a Gay Friend, Abortion, A Thoughtful Analysis, and Finding Truth, Whatever Happened to Right and Wrong. Three timely and sensitive issues, all presented with candor, compassion, and biblical accuracy. Supplies are limited, so go online today at lote.org. That's lote.org, and sign up for the Living on the Edge online community. Now, with some closing thoughts from today's message, here's Chip.
The information in these messages are highly packed, and I know it. But I want you to remember one thing that came through all of today's teaching. That little phrase, which theory best explains? Which theory best explains? They are both theories, and what I mean by that is they're both faith systems. Evolution isn't what scientific, smart, intellectual people believe, and creation what narrow-minded, non-scientific, anti-intellectual people believe. The fact of the matter is both are faith systems, and systematically what we've done, we've walked through and looked at the evidence and said, where did life come from? Let's look at the fossil record, and on the basis of the evidence, where's your faith? In our next broadcast, we're going to look at some of the most recent and in-depth arguments that involve the research of molecular biologists. I hope you'll be with us.
Well, thanks, Chip. As we wrap up today's program, let me remind you that you can watch Living on the Edge each Monday evening at 7 Eastern on DirecTV Channel 378. Living on the Edge television is a great way to introduce the ministry to your friends or as a creative alternative for your small group Bible study. That's Living on the Edge TV each Monday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 378. Well, be sure to join us again tomorrow as Chip continues our current series, Why I Believe. Until then, for Chip Ingram and the entire staff at Living on the Edge, this is Dave Drewy saying thanks for joining us for this edition of Living on the Edge.